and welcome to the 2:13 a.m. edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is the First Impressions podcast from a horrible, horrible, horrible night in Baltimore. I'm Joel A. Erickson. My editor, Nat Newell, is staying up to bring this to you guys. Just an unbelievable, in all the wrong ways, night in Baltimore. Colts had a 22-3 lead with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter, and just gave it away.
I'm not even sure what to think anymore about this team right now. What stuck out the most from this game for you?
It's hard to tell what the public is thinking or what people are thinking. I haven't seen any of the talk shows or, you know, what they said on SportsCenter after the game, obviously, because we were doing interviews. I know there's a lot of talk about Frank Reich's decision to run the ball on third down from 3rd and 8. It's 15. For me, it's the defense. I get that they were banged up in the secondary and they were injured, but it was just so easy for the Ravens in the second half. From that 22-3 point, like, you're just sitting there going, they need to score so fast, so many times. And it just kept happening. It starts with the bomb, the 43-yard bomb to Hollywood Brown, but it wasn't that play so much as it was how many throws went underneath to guys who were wide open, just insanely wide open. There was no resistance whatsoever. You think that in those situations, you force them to throw short and you make them drive the length of the field. You don't care so much about completions because you have the big lead, but they were just ripping off chunk after chunk after chunk. I think they only had like 6 20-yard passes or something like that, but there were a bunch of like 17 and 19 and 18-yard gains. They didn't get any pass rush on Lamar. Lamar can do a lot of stuff with his feet, but it felt like in the second half he was just standing there a lot. And this is what I wrote about in the end, was just, this has been a problem for this defense now, that the Chris Ballard, Matt Eberflus version of this defense, for 4 years. It's been 4 years now of this defense not being able to stop elite quarterbacks from throwing the ball on them. And we saw just the worst version of it. This was last year's collapse against Pittsburgh, just all packed into one quarter, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be easy to point to the injuries at cornerback and say, you know, that's a reason, not an excuse in this game. But, and it would be if, like you said, this didn't happen over and over again. I mean, yet really, it is getting to the point where you just have to sort of think this is what the defense is far too often.
Well, and they've navigated injuries before. So, the best game, I think, for this defense in its history is the Sunday night upset over the Chiefs, which it felt like that's where we were headed. It felt like we were headed to a Monday night upset of Baltimore that would really reorient what we thought of this team. And in that game, they were super banged up. They lost everybody in that game. And they found a way to keep Patrick Mahomes from scoring. And this time, anybody who isn't thinking about the defense, like, I would just challenge him to go back and watch those 4 drives and just how easily the Ravens scored moving the ball down the field. He was 29. Lamar Jackson was 29 of 32 for 335 yards and 4 touchdowns in the second half. You cannot – those are numbers that shouldn't be possible in the NFL. Just shouldn't be possible.
And especially after the first half, when I think he had less than 80 yards passing, and they had basically shut the running game down entirely. I mean, it was just shocking how fast and how much it changed from the first half to the second.
Well, even that sort of plays into this whole issue of the Colts defense always being the same. Like, if you were going to pick a defense to end the Baltimore streak of 100-yard rushing games, which happened tonight, which is weird to say after watching that, it would be the Colts, because they are always good against the run. Under Matt Eberflus, they are always good against the run. And a big reason why they're always good against the run is because That is the stuff he preaches: alignment, assignment, key technique, effort, hustle. That's how you stop the run. And they've been able to do that, and they did it. They did it tonight. The Ravens running backs did absolutely nothing. This game was entirely on par. But you have to finish the game, and it just felt like as soon as the Ravens got to the point where they were like, you know what, we're just going to throw this, that there was nothing the Colts defense could do. The depth issues with the injuries, I get that their top four corners were hurt outside of Ken Moore. I get that their top four corners on the outside were hurt, but it's kind of on them to have better options than they have. Once, like, Bo Peep Keys and Anthony Chesley? Like, come on. You can take a flyer on one of those guys that, you know, they made the waiver claims at the end, but we said, I think people said all offseason, that the depth at cornerback is going to be an issue. Marvell Tell didn't pan out. At some point, the Colts needed to go get somebody that they could feel like, especially after T.J. Carey went on IR. Go find somebody like T.J. Carey. There are random veteran corners out there available who are, at the very least, even if they're not good, they know if they're available, they're not good. Even if they're not good, at least they've played some in the NFL. I can't remember. Bo Peep Keys was mostly a special teamer for Kansas City. I can't remember off the top of my head what Anthony Chesley's playing history is in the NFL. But you can't get to a point where losing two corners puts you in that position against that defense or against that offense. Just an unbelievable microcosm of what we've seen from this defense now for 4 years. Stop the run, look great against it. Couldn't stop the pass at all. And, you know, I'm harping on the secondary here, but the pass rush is part of this too. They looked good for a little bit in the first half, but there were just too many times that there was just no one bearing down on Lamar and forcing him to get out of the pocket and do things. I get that it's Lamar. I get how elusive he is. But it's 29 of 32. That's how evident it is that there wasn't enough pass rush, is that he was 29 of 32 in the second half.
Well, anytime they seemed to be pressuring him, he was running wide open down the field at that point. So that's not
That was the other thing, is that these two things work against each other. So when they get pressure, on the plays that they get pressure, guys are open by 6 yards. And on plays where they actually covered somebody for a little bit, they didn't get enough pressure, which gave them time to get open by 6 yards. It was just a snowball of effect from this horrible relationship they have between the pass rush and the coverage. Just an unbelievable defensive collapse. And I was a little surprised that we weren't talking about that more after this game. I don't know why that is. I don't know why the defense sometimes just doesn't grab the focus of people's attention. But he threw for 335 yards and a half.
Hey, that in overtime too.
He had an all-time game. He had a career game and a half.
Yeah, he had over 500 yards of total offense. I think that's been done 20-something times in NFL history. So that's pretty insane. And just for the record, Anthony Chesley has played 20 snaps in his NFL career before today. How many do you think were played on defense before today?
Like three?
Zero. He played his first defensive snaps today.
Wow.
You were starting to get to this, but I mean, you know.
You gotta have a better answer than that. You just do it. Marvell Tell.
You were starting to get into the offense. I mean, obviously, our lives are part, Twitter is part of our lives because of our job, and that's where we see, that's where we get a lot of our interaction with people. We were just talking, that is not a majority of the people, yet there is clearly at least a vocal minority of the people who want to put this on the offense, and I'm not sure how I understand that at all. Is it just because a small percentage of the fan base has decided that Frank Reich is no good no matter what, and you know that's where they're going to go? Or do you have any idea on why the Colts fan base responds the way they do?
I think that's part of it. I think that there's a part of the fan base that's decided that they've given up on Reich, and that's where they're going to go whenever things go bad, and things have gone bad a lot. It's really hard in this game for me to... First of all, Frank Reich said that the third down call to run the ball was too conservative. He wishes he had it back. But one of the things I kept thinking about was the same people who are upset at Reich for that are usually upset at Reich for being too aggressive. That's kind of his reputation as the guy who's too aggressive. And so when he played it safe and played for the kick, now that's wrong. Now, granted, there was a kicker situation with injury that we'll get into a little bit. But I guess the flip side of that is he made two kicks. Like Rodrigo Blankenship had made two kicks. I prefer when coaches go for the jugular. So I didn't love that he ran the ball there. But I understand what he was trying to do. Make it burn the timeout. He essentially was trying to put them in a corner they couldn't get out of. He was trying to get the Ravens to either give up their last timeout and then let them kick, or not give up the timeout, burn 40 seconds, they get the kick, and essentially the Ravens wouldn't have enough time to make up two scores because they wouldn't have had the timeouts left. So I get what he was trying to do there. I just don't think that in a game where the play calling was that good and that precise, they got so many people open against that defense, it's hard for me to put the whole thing on that one decision. When the offense, for the most part, did exactly what it was supposed to do, right? There was a strip sack fumble when Fisher got beat by Owe. There a couple of those drives, maybe you want them to finish in touchdowns. But like, they had over 500 yards total offense. They probably should have had 31 points. It's against the Ravens. It's hard for me to be upset at the offense.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, the Reich's thinking makes total sense. And I mean, I'm not even sure if he believed what he was saying after there, because he's saying, it didn't work, so I should have done something else. Well, you know, again, you should pick the strategy that you think has the best chance to succeed. What people really struggle with is if there's a 85-15% chance that it's the right call, that 15% chance still comes in on occasion, and it turns out to be the wrong thing. It's really hard for me to wrap my mind around people's reaction to Reich. I mean, certainly there, I mean, and maybe this is why no coach ever goes for it on fourth down, because you're opening yourself up to so much criticism when it doesn't work, even if you're coming out ahead overall and making those decisions. It's the statistics say we NFL coaches should go for it more often. But this is the result where everybody's going to jump down Frank Reich's throat. I guess I sort of understand why for years and years coaches didn't do it.
You raise an interesting point that maybe we'll get into at some point. But just the idea that maybe Frank Reich is too honest with the way he thinks after games. I was just going to let you unpack that a little bit, and then I was going to give an answer back. So just let me know what you were thinking with that.
It's just that I think you were right and I was wrong when we texted about this, in that Reich had to say something, and maybe, you know, but is he giving the fans too much? I mean, is he just, you know, he could easily say, you know, it was the right call and it just didn't play out. You know, is he putting it on himself instead of on his players for not executing, things like that? You know, and I hate saying it, because you want these guys to be straightforward and honest, and Frank Reich certainly is. I mean, one thing I thought was fascinating was when the Indy Stars columnist Greg Doyle sort of called Frank on the carpet for the whole Carson Wentz when his ankles were injured. Frank comes out and says, you know, as soon as I get off the phone with the media, I'm going to go talk to the doctor. And Greg pointed out, hey, you could have talked to the doctor and then told the media and thus the public what was going on with the quarterback. But Frank in that, you know, and number one, Frank in that situation could have simply said, I don't know, we don't know what his situation is, and not get any more details. Also, to his credit, he told, and I 100% support what Greg wrote, and Greg's 100% right, but Frank Reich said, You know, I'm not telling you, or we're doing it this way because it's a competitive advantage for us to do it this way. And to Frank's credit, he said it's a fair question, but we don't think it's to our advantage. And, you know, it's just examples like that where he probably would have been better off just saying we don't know yet and leaving it at that.
So this is my take on this. The first thing I'll say is that Frank Reich is caught, every head coach is caught in a catch-22. If you defend every decision you make and never admit doing anything wrong, then you're too hard-headed to change. And if you admit mistakes, then you're second-guessing yourself too much, and that's bad too. You're too wishy-washy. You're making too many mistakes on the beginning. I think you should want a coach who is trying to figure out how to make himself better by questioning his decisions, being willing to admit mistakes. I think that that's what you should want out of a coach. Because I think the worst thing that can happen is a coach who never learns and never grows and never does anything differently. And I'm sure, I know there's people listening to this who would say, you know, Reich doesn't do anything differently. I don't know if I agree with that. But you should want a coach who's saying this, like you should want him to say, okay, I'm not sure if that was the right call. Rather than, because then when he does defend it, you know that he's thought about it. Whereas you see coaches all the time who just, every time this stuff comes up, they just say, well, I'm the coach, and that's how it goes. And those guys usually end up getting called on the carpet for being too hard-headed and not being willing to adapt anything. I think this offense particularly has been fairly adaptable in Reich's tenure, and a lot of it has to do with this self-evaluation that he's always doing. Now, are people going to want to call him on the carpet? Yes, he's the head coach. They're 1-4. But I think that you'd rather have a coach who is self-evaluating and self-critical than somebody who's just hard-headed and saying, I'm right because I'm right and I said I was right.
I agree with that, but at what point is he just not right enough? I don't know that I think we're at that point with Frank Reich, but we are, you know, we're getting there pretty quick the way this season is going. And again, I mean, as I said earlier, there's some times where, you know, the coach can say, I did this for this reason, and that reason could be 100% logical and make sense, but sometimes it just doesn't work out, and if you string too many of those together, you find yourself in the spot that the Colts are in right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's also fair to say that Reich necessarily hasn't been at the top of his game in terms of all of his decisions. There's been a lot of stuff that's gone wrong, but I guess it's hard because so much of this is just dependent on what happens. Like I said, most of the time when we're talking about one of Reich's decisions, we're talking about how he's too aggressive. And should he have just taken the points, or is he go for it on fourth down too much? All that kind of stuff. That's almost always the narrative. This time, he's being killed for being too conservative. And at some point, like, is it just that all these decisions just come down to did it work or not?
It does seem like that. I mean, the other part of this is if Blankenship makes a kick, one of three that missed, this is a totally different conversation.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's got nothing to do with, that has very little to do with Frank Reich. He got hurt. Sounds like Rodrigo either suffered some kind of injury or started suffering from some kind of injury before the game started. And, you know, there's, what do you do in that? There's nothing you can do in that situation.
Yeah. And so I've seen a lot. I think the first thought is, well, if you have a hurt kicker, why play to kick the ball at all? And that, I can see some of that. I can understand some of that. But Blankenship had made two field goals. I think 37 and 43 were the lengths. And clearly he was able to kick at least some. I mean, he didn't miss the game winner at the end of the game because it was too short, I didn't think. I mean, obviously, if you're hurting, that makes it harder to swing your leg the way it needs to go. So he could kick in some capacity. He's gonna have. I think he's gonna have an MRI. I asked him flat out if he's gonna have an MRI, and he said he's gonna get checked out tomorrow. I think it's probable that we're gonna see a move made with him with this hip thing, and another kicker might be in here next week. Just from an injury standpoint, it's kind of tough to with the kick. I feel like with a kicking injury, you can't just play through that. You've got to make sure it's fine once you know it's there, because otherwise, you have games like tonight.
Yeah, and I don't think you can play the game not trying, you know, you can't, you're running out of time. You can't play and say, we're not going to kick the ball, unless the kicker flat out can't kick. I mean, if he can't walk and can't go out there, obviously you have no choice. But I just don't think, I mean, you're playing with one foot tied behind your back if you're going to go out there and not use your, and think you can't use your kicker at all.
If he was 1 for 3 at that point, then I'd say at that point you put it in the bed and you're just going for it on fourth down, and at the end you say, I had to.
Yeah. You know?
But he made 2 field goals. That's what I keep coming back to. He made a 37-yarder, he made a 43-yarder. I think the one that got blocked was a 37-yarder.
And he said he thought that would have made it if he had, you know, he would have made that one if it hadn't been blocked.
Right. So I don't know. It sounded like the injury was fairly serious, but on the flip side, he was kicking, and he did make some kicks. So I think the larger thing is it's in a weekend where kicking was such a big deal. Those 2 missed kicks, it'll be interesting to see what they say after they have a chance to see where Calais Campbell got through to block the kick and everything, to see if they just feel like they had a protection breakdown. But you're right. If they make any of those 3 kicks, the Colts win, and we're talking about what an unbelievable performance they had when no one thought they could do it.
And in fact, if they kick the extra point instead of going for 2 at one point there, then that might be the difference. I mean, you can turn it over in your head any number of ways that you want.
Yeah, no, the kicking situation clearly played a key role in this game. Also, I think one of the other things that goes into the third down call is that people are saying, if you can't trust your quarterback on 3rd and 8, then why is he here? And it's really hard for me to go there on a night that Carson Wentz had 400 passing yards and made a couple and made a lot of big plays, a lot of really good throws. I just don't think that we've seen them play that way with Wentz, where they're scared. I thought Wentz played really well today. Were there a couple misses? Yeah, but sometimes guys miss throws. And overall, I think 25 of 35 for 402 yards?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. In some respects, Wentz is the quarterback version of Reich, only nationally in Wentz's case, where he can make a mistake because he's made so many mistakes in the past. Most of which is, I mean, basically contained to that, you know, to a really lousy 2020 season. But it's, you know, he's in, and again, he's done some things to put himself in that spot too. We don't need to, too sorry for Carson Wentz, but it does seem like people are very quick to criticize any mistake he makes and not recognize the positive things he's done.
I mean, like, just from a throw standpoint, the play action fade coming out of the half, the ball he got to Michael Pittman, even though he was getting hit for the big touchdown, the 2 throws he made with 39 seconds left, first the fade route, and then the ball over the middle of the pass to set up the last touchdown. There were a lot of really good throws in there and a lot of really good stuff. There were a couple of throws he made that got dropped that I thought were really good throws on slants and stuff. And again, no interception. Didn't put the ball really in jeopardy of an interception. I find it really hard to be bailing on Carson Wentz after what we've seen through 5 games.
Yeah, it'd be, yeah. I mean, we all said going into the season that the biggest question mark was the quarterback. And with the exception of obviously getting 2 sprained ankles and trying to play through it and not playing well, and, you know, understandably so, not playing well, he's been as good or better than anyone should have expected.
I mean, I don't know what his numbers are off the top of my head for the season, but I'm assuming he's got to be, it's like 7 touchdowns, 1 pick. I guess his yards per attempt are somewhere in the low 7s now after that game. And completion percentage around 65-ish or 63-ish or 64-ish or something like that. And a rating that's probably close to 100. I think if you told people that at the beginning of the season, they'd be like, that's pretty good. Sounds great.
It's hard to argue with what he's done. And I believe, taking a quick look, your numbers are pretty close. You might be a little high on the completion percentage, but and on the quarterback, on the passer rating, but not by much. Is it time to look a little bit harder at what Ballard and Reich have done for the Colts? Or are we now, I mean, in the middle of the season, it's kind of foolish to talk, especially about the GM, but should people be a little less confident in that pairing than previously?
Well, I think that especially the positions that stick out to me are just the ones that there's a lot of them now where there's a lot of decisions made this offseason that have clearly been a problem so far this season. Matt Pryor played pretty well today, so they finally might have found a swing tackle. But Eric Fisher is still having some struggles. I mean, whether or not he was offsides, whether or not Oa was offsides on the strip sack, it's hard to tell. The refs didn't call it. Either way, he got blown by. There's been too many sacks. He hasn't replaced Costanzo the way you'd hope he would. Backup quarterback has been a talking point. Although Wentz has played through stuff and has played something like 99% of the snaps so far. Cornerback, they decided to run it back at cornerback with Rhodes and Carey, and that hasn't worked out so far. Defensive end, going with the young guys, has not worked out so far. I think it would be a disservice to Reich to be talking only about his decision-making without acknowledging that Ballard has made a lot of Ballard's decisions have gone wrong so far this season. It's a disservice or right to say this is all on him when some of the problems with the roster are Ballard's problems with the roster.
And at one point I thought this might have been sort of a consolidation year where they were trying to figure out what they had in certain areas. And maybe it was. I mean, who knows if that's what they were thinking or not. But number one, they didn't obviously they traded for Wentz, but they didn't go for it crazy in free agency. And in terms of it being a consolidation year, where I'm not sure that they've consolidated anything. I mean, Lewis looked good today. Ture has looked better. So maybe they've figured out a few things in the pass rush. But they're, where are they at in terms of cornerbacks next year? Where are they at in terms of, if Fisher's okay, maybe they're all right on the offensive line, but I don't know. I'm not sure that the plan is playing out the way they had hoped or expected.
No, they needed some of, like, it's, I think that the team would be okay if a couple of these decisions had gone correctly, but so many of them have gone wrong. I think the ones that have gone right is Michael Pittman has developed into a big-time receiver for them. Carson Wentz has largely worked out. I know there's people who might disagree with me on that, but Carson Wentz has largely been pretty good and put them in positions to win. Outside of that, a lot of the other stuff has been a problem, and because it's a problem now, it's going to be a problem in the offseason.
Right.
What we've seen in the past is that this makes Ballard get more aggressive. And maybe we see that. Maybe we see them get more aggressive in the offseason next year. But they've got a. This is the second time now that running it back with a team that did some good, that did some good things and hoping for improvement has bit them. And I wonder if that changes the thinking going forward on how to handle when things look good, because realistically right now they're 1-4, but the schedule's about to get easier. And with an offense that feels like it's finding itself and playing a lot better, I don't know what to say about defense. But as far with an offense that feels like it's finding its way and playing a little bit better, you think that there's probably going to be some positives coming in here. And yeah, I think the mistake would be, once we get to the offseason, to forget about what happened at the beginning of the season and not want to make the move that you need to make there to make the big step that you need to make. Now maybe in the next 12 games, maybe Quiddy Pay comes back from his hamstring injury and looks dominant. That would change the calculus of defense now. There's stuff that could happen here that could change that. But the Colts need to internalize what's going on here with them trying to run it back with the roster and know that going forward, that you can't necessarily count on, especially when you're counting on guys who have either been injured in the past or are veterans in their 30s, and it's hard to know what they're going to be.
Another big factor, or potentially big factor here, is if you've given up your first-round pick for Carson Wentz, I don't think you have any choice but to spend more on free agency than you want to, in the perfect world, because you don't even have that first-round pick.
Yeah, I agree. And I know people are going to be talking about whether or not to sit Wentz down. I still think it's going to be hard for them. I don't know who's going to ask that question first, but I think that it would make them barf.
Well, to me, at 1-4, it's if 1-4 is extended through the rest of the year, it's an easy choice. There is no way you play him. You sit him if you're 2-8, and you're looking at a top, whatever, 6 pick, 7 pick, 10 pick, and the difference is whether you've got Wentz and whether you have that pick, you got to sit him. But let's flip this on its side here and end on what I think is probably a positive note. Okay, next 5 games for the Colts: Houston, San Francisco with perhaps no quarterback, Tennessee at home, New York Jets, Jacksonville. You got to go 5-0 there, I think. But that's not totally out of the realm of possibility. And then you look at Tennessee. What are they? Well, their next 5 games: Buffalo, Kansas City, Colts, Rams, Saints. Could Tennessee go 0-5? Kansas City's not been good so far. Who knows what will happen with the Colts game, and the Saints haven't been what we expected. So, any number of possibilities there. But, we're not out of the realm of possibility of this totally flipping over the next month.
No, especially the way they played today. There was a good portion of the game where I was getting ready to write, we finally got to see what the Colts were supposed to look like. And against weaker competition, against teams that don't have Lamar Jackson, it's more likely that they're going to be able to finish those games, So I think I'd still be surprised if they end up at 2-8, especially with what's coming
up. Right. I don't see any way they get to 2-8 with that lineup coming up.
And if they have any chance at the playoffs, they're not going to pull Wentz.
Yeah, you can't in that situation. But then you're also talking about the 18th or 20th pick in the draft as opposed to the 6th. I mean, that's different. The stakes are different there. But I do think we're at the point where the Colts better win 5 in a row. I mean, because you then got Buffalo, Tampa Bay, Houston, New England, Arizona, Las Vegas, Jacksonville. So,
the 3 games that are really tough, that just loom really large right now, are Buffalo, Tampa, and Arizona.
Right.
Sitting at 4 losses and knowing that those 3 teams are on your schedule means you pretty much have to be perfect against the rest of it. Now, if there's one silver lining, if for a little while there it looked like the Raiders were going to be one of those teams, and now they're very clearly not going to be one of those teams.
For any number of reasons, yes.
Yeah. After John Gruden was fired or resigned or whatever happened, it was going on during the game. So I'm not a little.
He resigned, although it sounded like it wasn't his choice to resign. But how he, you know, how you could say what he said in his resignation letter, and you know, I didn't mean to hurt anyone when the things he said were entirely 100% hurtful is beyond me. But that's another podcast.
But yeah, so those three games are really tough, and if you lose all three of those, you're already at 7 losses, and that means you're already on the edge of the playoff picture.
Right. You've got 9-3 minimum is what they got to do.
And yeah, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but they're also based on what we've seen the last 2 weeks, I think there's probably a pretty good chance that they play themselves into playoff contention. And it probably goes a while, and I think that means that as long as Wentz doesn't get seriously injured, they're going to leave him in there.
Right, right. It's going to be, I believe that he's going to have to miss 5 games to not qualify for a first-round pick, effectively. And that gets you, I mean, that would be after the Tampa Bay game. So if they win the next 5 or even 4 of the next 5, it's hard for me to see them sitting him, you know, after Tampa Bay. So, and Tennessee's schedule, you know, again, who knows what's going to happen. Their schedule gets easier after the Saints, Houston, New England, Jacksonville. Then they've got Pittsburgh and San Francisco. I don't know. Pittsburgh's been up and down. Is San Francisco going to have a quarterback that late in the season? Maybe yes, maybe no. And then they got Miami and Houston to finish it out. So it's, you know, you're going to have to be ahead of them by the time you get there. But as bad as it's been for the Colts, it's still within their grasp. But you said this, it's pretty obvious. In order to have any of that happen, you actually have to win games. And that is something they've shown that they aren't capable of doing so far.
They had one tonight, and they gave it away.
And if the way Wentz looked at the end of the game tonight, it's not hard to see them beating the Rams with him healthy. I mean,
yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. If he hadn't sprained that ankle, the way he looked in that 39 seconds to get them into field goal range, he would have had 2 minutes. He was playing well in that game anyway. Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's the other thing is it's all about your margin for error, and they've had way too narrow a margin for error. You know, it's easy to say if they just make a kick, they win this game, and it's true, but you can't, you know, you have too many of those, you're going to split those games, you're going to lose some of them no matter what you do, so you can't count on that. You've got to be up by more points so that the little things don't do you in. So when you maybe are too conservative on that third down call, it doesn't lose, it's not the difference in the game if you're up by more points, so
to bring this back to where we started, if your defense can just get any stop at all,
even just slow them down,
even if just slow them down and make them work for it, then that third down call doesn't matter as much.
Right, and they don't have enough time if you just don't let them run up and down the field wide open. So, it's late.
Yeah, it's late. That's it. We are back to the hotel. We are going to get out and get into the hotel here. But that's the First Impressions Colts Cover 2 podcast from a really bad night.